from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, last night's nasty and tense presidential debate came at the end of a disastrous weekend for GOP nominee Donald Trump. Republican leaders continue to defect from his campaign after the release Friday of a videotape showing Trump boasting of sexually assaulting women. Did Trump do enough last night to revive his struggling campaign? We'll talk with experts about the takeaways from the debate and the challenges facing each candidate in the home stretch. And we want to hear from you. Join us for Forum. It's next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. With less than a month before Election Day, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump met last night in St. Louis for the second of three planned debates. The event was overshadowed by a bombshell released by The Washington Post on Friday, a 2005 videotape in which Trump bragged about using his star power to sexually assault women. That tape led numerous GOP legislators to withdraw their endorsements of their party's nominee. And last night, Trump tried to change the narrative by holding a press conference with a group of women who have accused Bill Clinton of sexual abuse. Let's hear a few clips from last night's debate. First, here's Donald Trump's response to moderator Anderson Cooper, who asked him about his boasts about sexually assaulting women.
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. But this is locker room talk. You know, when we have a world where you have ISIS chopping off heads, where you have, and frankly, drowning people in steel cages, where you have wars and horrible, horrible sights all over.
And here is Hillary Clinton's response to the tape.
What we all saw and heard on Friday was Donald talking about women, what he thinks about women, what he does to women. And he has said that the video doesn't represent who he is. But I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is. Because we've seen this throughout the campaign.
We'll have several political experts talking with us about the debate in this opening hour of Forum. But first, let's check in with Beth Reinhart from The Wall Street Journal. She's national politics reporter for the Journal and joining us this morning from a Trump rally in Pennsylvania. Welcome, Beth Reinhart.
Hi, thank you.
Good to have you with us. And the real question is, particularly since you're at a Trump rally, how much do the Trump supporters or Trump campaign people feel that they've put this behind them because of last night's debate?
Well, I don't think, I think last night's debate only will reinforce that hardcore support. I think the bigger challenge for Mr. Trump is broadening that support. And I'm not sure that he did that last night. There's no doubt that the folks that come to his rally today, and there was already long, long lines of people hours before the rally is scheduled to start, you know, they're still in Trump's corner. And I don't know that there's anything that could separate them from their from the nominee, because in part because his message is based so much on, you know, defying the establishment, defying the national media. And so, you know, Republicans defecting from swearing off the presidential nominee, or national media stories that, you know, raise questions about Mr. Trump's, comments in 2005 that were, you know, very crude. These are all viewed through a prism of skepticism by his supporters. So I think they'll remain in his camp, but I think he's going to struggle to broaden that tent over the next few weeks.
Well, the defections of other Republicans, in other words, from the base and from the strong and ardent supporters of Trump don't seem to make much difference. But you were in St. Louis. Do you think he moved the needle at all? Do you think he gained any ground politically?
I mean, I think he sort of steadied himself in that he gave a pretty strong performance, that did some good in reassuring Republicans and others that the whole ticket is not collapsing. I mean, sometimes there's this feeling of panic because of this extraordinary avalanche of news going from one to the next. So, you know, he definitely scored some points against Mrs. Clinton last night. She also scored points. We may, you know, be in pretty much the same place, though I think there was obviously some damage done by the revelations in that video the last few days. And so the next wave of polling will show us how badly he has been damaged by that.
Talking with Beth Reinhart, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. I also wanted to get your take on this town hall format last night. I think the way you reported it, Hillary Clinton was looking directly at people that she was talking to one-on-one, and Trump's eyes were looking toward the moderators mainly, or the certainly not necessarily looking at the people he was talking to.
Right. I mean, Mrs. Clinton, obviously a very polished politician with a lot of practice doing town halls. She did, you know, countless town halls in 2008, and then dozens more earlier this year when she was running against Bernie Sanders. Trump, because of his celebrity status, kind of bypassed that town hall tradition and mostly did, you know, had these massive rallies drawing thousands of people in the primaries. And he's continued with that, though. In the last few months, he has done more town halls. So he's gotten a little bit more experience with that, except that they tend to be invite-only audiences. So it's a friendly crowd. Sometimes he doesn't take questions, or the questions are pre-screened. So these are not unexpected and awkward questions the way they were last night. And, you know, Mrs. Clinton walked toward the people that were addressing her. She asked them questions about who they were. Trump did not engage with the audience in that way. And he, you know, several times argued with the moderators that they were interrupting him more than her. And so he didn't seem quite as comfortable in the format.
Beth Reinhart, again, national politics reporter for The Wall Street Journal, joins us this morning from a Trump rally in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for being with us, Beth. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
And by the way, we're going to be talking with a couple of Bay Area political scientists for the rest of the hour, but we also are going to be talking with you and invite your calls. If you have some thoughts about last night's debate or questions, you can join us at our toll-free number, and that's whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite this morning. That number is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to call the program again toll-free at 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, or register your comments and thoughts and questions to us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Ken Goldstein joining us in studio, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Glad
to
have you. And we also have Melinda Jackson with us this morning, associate professor and chair of the political science department at San Jose State University. And Melinda Jackson, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning to you. Let me begin with you, Melinda Jackson. Just get your take about what was, I suppose, in some people's minds, an attempt to offset the video that was released from Access Hollywood in which Trump was talking about grabbing women by their genitals and so forth, scoring and all the rest of that, that he pretty much tried to sort of bury by saying it was locker room talk. And then you had that show beforehand with Trump bringing forward accusers of Bill Clinton's and going in, of course, to the 33,000 emails. I mean, before the debate actually began, he had all these defections. Was he able, in your judgment, to neutralize some of that, or at least by presenting himself in the fashion that he did, stop the hemorrhaging?
No, I don't think he had a very effective response to the questions about the tape. The question that Anderson Cooper asked him was whether he understood that the things he was bragging about on the tape constituted sexual assault. And he definitely did not seem to acknowledge that. Instead, he did what he has done in the past, which is double down and deny saying those things, and then eventually claim that it was just talk and not actions, and therefore apparently not very serious. I don't think that answer is going to win over many undecided voters. I don't think it's going to satisfy many women voters who are very disturbed by these comments, and men as well, I will say. We saw over the weekend the reaction within the party. And while he may have shored up his support among his core base supporters last night, I don't think that he did an effective job of broadening that appeal.
Well, let's hear what Ken Goldstein has to say. I'm sorry. Please finish your sentence.
We are less than a month from Election Day, and this is certainly not where a candidate wants to be at this point in the campaign.
I wanted to go to Ken Goldstein, though, because Kenny was saying doubling down is putting it mildly. Many people are comparing this to a debate in a banana republic when you say to your opponent, because you'd be in jail or I'm going to get a prosecutor and put you in jail and so forth. He was obviously throwing raw meat not only to his supporters but to people who might have been on the fence saying, this is a criminal I'm facing here.
Yeah. I always tell my students I really hate it when analysts or professors say they've never seen anything like it, but I've never seen anything like it in the last couple days.
Can I quote the lead sentence of Joe Garofoli from this morning's San Francisco Chronicle? Sunday was a bad night for America. I think that says a lot.
So Friday, the Sunday debate, the press conference before, we're going to continue to see some WikiLeaks, I think, here over the next couple days. And I would be shocked if that was not the last Trump audio tape that we see in the last 29 days here before the election. I think in 2 points I would make. It's not so important what I think about the debate or what you think about the debate. They were not really aimed at us. The debates are not aimed at us. The debates are aimed at people who are potentially swing voters, and to mobilize people who may be on the fence about voting. And I think, objectively looking at the last couple days, I think we've gone from a world where it was a 3 to 5 percentage point Hillary Clinton victory, which is what the fundamentals would suggest given the structure of the electorate when you have two very unpopular candidates, to potentially a greater win for Hillary. And I think the story these last 30 days, and with all the caveat of we have given Trump's political obituary many times over the last 14 or 15 months. But I think we're in a world where this is either going to look like an Obama victory in 2012, and that would be my low point, to something that is a little bit more significant. So any repair that Trump can do, I think, only gets him within field goal range. I don't see any repair getting him over the top.
Well, speaking of repair, there were some issues that were addressed in spite of all of the, shall we say, bickering and snipes and barbs and, well, derogating things that went back and forth. That was quite a spectacle in itself. But, for example, one of the things that that came up and has been, central to this argument between the candidates was the Affordable Care Act. What we heard from Trump was it has to be essentially done away with. What we heard from Hillary Clinton was some acknowledgement of the fact that there were problems, but we can repair those problems and we can do better with them. This affects people's lives. And the question is, what is the American citizenry, particularly voters that both of them want, going to do, or maybe those people on the fence, with those kinds of arguments?
So, in terms of the debate, that was probably the most substantive exchange of the 90 minutes. And again, in a world where we had not had Friday and we had not had the Sunday press conference, that might be getting a lot of attention. And I think probably objectively was a moment that would have pleased the Trump campaign in terms of what effect that might have had on mobilizing base Republicans and moving over some swing voters. But I'm not sure how much attention that got last night, and I'm not sure how much attention that's going to get here in the days after in the coverage of the debate.
Well, let's talk with you, Melinda Jackson, about attention and what's going to get attention. It was fascinating. For example, we heard before when Trump was asked about the video that caused such a storm over the weekend and got so much attention, that he did a quick pivot and he started talking about ISIS. I mean, in some ways, he was not only reaching out to his base there, but he was saying, you know, this is just locker room talk. We have more important things to talk about.
Yeah, he did do that, and he was clearly trying to deflect attention from this very negative story focused on himself and his temperament and whether he is presidential and can be a good role model in the White House. I don't know that it will be effective. Again, voters do care about national security and terrorism. That is one of their top concerns. They care about the economy and jobs even more. And Trump has been pretty light on specifics in terms of specific policy proposals on both of those fronts. He tends to really focus on the negative vision he has for where our country is right now. And that, I think, is an effective strategy because a majority of Americans does feel that the country is on the wrong track, that we have real problems, that they don't necessarily trust the government to solve them. And so the more he can try to connect with that negativity about government, I think that is potentially his best strategy at this point. But again, his credibility and his temperament has been so damaging in terms of voters' impressions of him that he's going to have a really hard time broadening that appeal beyond that hardcore of really frustrated, resentful voters who do feel like he's speaking for them more at an emotional level than any real policy positions.
Well, there is a new NBC Wall Street Journal report Ken Goldstein just brought to my attention just out. It has Clinton winning that debate 46% to 35%. But I'm wondering about something else that came up last night that I think may win Trump some voters, Ken Goldstein, and that's the fact that he kept talking about all those emails and so forth, but he also kept talking about 550% increase from Syria. And there are a lot of people who feel that he called it a great Trojan horse, and he was saying, in effect, you know, you can't vet these people well enough. You have to, in fact, make sure that they're not going to invade the country or come in the country as possible jihadists and so forth. I think he scored some points probably with people on the fence with that, don't you think, who are afraid of nativists?
So the NBC Wall Street Journal by the poll was a horse race poll. So that shows Hillary Clinton up by 11 percentage points in the horse race, which they took after Friday. Again, I think maybe not targeted towards San Francisco or targeted towards college professors. Some of those discussions and back and forths about Syrian refugees, about ISIS, and about healthcare are conversations I think the Trump campaign really wish they would have had in the first debate. But again, I think there's only so much oxygen out there. So many informational ping pong balls that people can take in their heads, and it's getting overwhelmed by, again, I said I hate when people say they've never seen anything like it, but the never seen anything like it sort of news we've gotten over the last couple days.
Well, they did talk about tax policy. They talked about carried interest and that sort of thing. Talk about never heard before. We've never heard a candidate before say, you know, I know more about the tax code than anybody who's ever run for the presidency, or no one respects women more than I do, those kinds of things. I mean, there's such hyperbole that, you know, there's supposed to be a sense of presidential candidates having some humility, I suppose, and that gets us into style. Let me actually go to you on this, Melinda Jackson, because Hillary Clinton, you know, she said, I'm going to take the high road, not the low road, quoting Michelle Obama. She remained pretty poised throughout, whereas, you know, Trump was, I don't know what he was doing. He was hulking and holding on to the chair and sniffing a great deal and walking around and so forth. How much does that carry with voters, do you think? I mean, that different demeanor, quite a contrast, dramatic different demeanor.
Well, that is one of the important things about the debates, is that you really get to see the two candidates side by side. And the visual information is really quite important. So I think Clinton did do a better job of staying calm and collected. She also really did take advantage of the town hall format, I think, better than Trump did. She walked up to the voters who were asking questions. She tried to connect with them. She's still not quite able to do that as well as her husband, but she did make an attempt to utilize that format to her advantage. Trump did not do that as effectively, and there were some strange visuals of him seeming to kind of lurk behind her, and that kind of aggressive, almost menacing body language, I think, was disturbing, especially in the context of these gender issues that we're talking about here. So,
you know, it hurt Rick Lazio in the New York debate with Hillary Clinton, as many may recall, when she ran for the Senate, because he kind of got up in her face physically.
Exactly, exactly. So it's that kind of interaction between the candidates and seeing how the candidates interact with the voters that also forms an overall impression of this debate. That said, I think, you know, we are seeing that most people are remembering just the extreme negativity. You know, you could really almost really see that hostility between the two of them quite palpably in the room.
Well, at least they shook hands at the end, even though they didn't at the beginning. But let me go to a caller here. And Keith, let's get you on with us. Good morning.
Morning. My question was for the Trump campaign. I'm wondering, like, what's going to happen? What would happen if the Republican Party pulled funding and would that fracture the base? And would he continue on his own money? Or what would happen?
Yeah, what do you think about that, Ken Goldstein? I mean, if money starts going away from flying away from Donald Trump, where is he?
I mean, the Republican Party pulling away.
Yeah, I understand what you're asking. Let's go to Ken Goldstein on this. We're coming up on a break here. Go ahead, Ken.
So the Republican Party itself doesn't have that much money, and the money that it does have was mainly raised by Trump. So the money that is in the campaign here for the last 30 days. The Trump campaign controls. So where the RNC can certainly try and at the margin reallocate funds towards House and Senate races, and while their House and Senate arms will certainly completely focus on that, the money Trump has, he has, and then he's going to have a decision about whether he actually, which he has really not done very much here in the general election, spend any of his own money.
In fact, there's been some controversy about the money coming out of the Trump Foundation and, of course, money about where it's all going as far as his own money is concerned. But we are coming up on a break, and I want to get more of our listener responses. I want to talk about energy policy with our guests. That did come up last night, about Supreme Court appointees also came up. There were actually issues that were addressed in the midst of all that contentiousness and the like. We're talking to Ken Goldstein, who's professor of politics at USF, and Melinda Jackson, who is associate professor and chairs the political science department at San Jose State. And again, we do welcome your calls. If you saw the debate, if you heard the debate, the second general election debate, and you want to comment on it or ask a question about it to our two political scientists, we welcome you to the program. Toll-free number 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Please feel free to join us, and we will be back with your calls and emails. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about last night's debate, the second debate in the general election. And it was, I suppose, what you could call a battle royal and a bit of a Donnybrook. And let's hear from last night's debate. I want to go to more of your calls, of course, and emails. And you can join us, by the way, not only by calling us, but emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. There were a lot of eyebrows raised by a threat that came from Donald Trump last night to get a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Clinton.
I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like it. And we're going to have a special prosecutor. When I speak, I go out and speak, the people of this country are furious.
Let me go to Ken Goldstein on this, and he's, again, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. You've been talking about how it may be a cliche to say we've never seen anything like this before, but we or heard anything like this before, but certainly we've not heard anything like that before, have we?
So in a well, I'm not sure I've ever heard it in any debate in any country, but I have certainly never heard an American presidential debate when one candidate threatens the other candidate with a special prosecutor and putting them in jail. You know, again, and I'm saying this with a smile on my face, you keep pressing me to talk about policy and I keep pressing back and saying, yeah, there were a couple substantive policy moments in the debate last night. But when you have moments like that, when you have moments at the start of the debate, when you have what happened on Friday, when you have Trump's press conference on Sunday, that overwhelms, I think, any potential we have to have a serious policy discussion.
However, he did, Melinda Jackson, let me go to you this. He kept hitting her on bad judgment. It was almost a repeated motif throughout the debate and bringing up Libya and bringing up what happened in Iraq and so forth, even things that perhaps someone could argue were not as much on her watch as she responded by saying. I mean, that may hit home with some people, I think, in terms of judgment, particularly because of the email controversy.
Yes. I think that was one of the more effective lines of attack that he had. And I noted at least three times that he mentioned that Bernie Sanders had also questioned Hillary Clinton's judgment. So this was perhaps an attempt by Trump to broaden his appeal a little bit, reach out to some of those disaffected Democratic voters, Bernie supporters, and also to continue to raise questions about her trustworthiness and her judgment. She did a pretty good job of responding to the email question, though. She, you know, the other thing that I really noticed in both of the debates is you really see the contrast between a professional career politician and a political rookie. Hillary Clinton did the political thing, which was to answer the criticism directly and to say, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. Trump has not been able to take responsibility for the things that he's being attacked on. So in terms of questioning her judgment, again, I think the folks out there who are supporting Trump, the folks who already dislike Clinton, they already disliked her to begin with. I don't know that this is going to necessarily convince many more people at this point that she is less trustworthy or less qualified to be president than he is.
Well, when you mention apologies, and of course it's always been almost characteristic of many presidents of the United States not to apologize, I think it somehow in many minds of chief executives of this country demeans their power or their office or something. And she did apologize, and she said he never apologizes for anything to anyone. She was talking about, the federal judge and his Mexican heritage, about President Barack Obama being accused of not being eligible to serve as president and so forth. And she made a point of that. And I want to bring in our callers. Let me go to San Jose first and welcome Abel. You're on. Morning.
Good morning. Yeah, so I'm a Mexican-American, and I've been deeply offended by a lot of things Donald Trump has said regarding race and minorities and gender issues, et cetera, down the road, down the line. I think all of it's been pretty bad. Having said that, I do think he has been treated unfairly. Last night, I do feel like he was being treated unfairly by the moderators. It's kind of ironic because I do feel like he has treated so many people unfairly, and so it's kind of getting back to him. But I did sense that, and I was wondering if that was a sentiment other people felt as well, that Anderson and the other moderator were being a little more unfair towards Trump than they were towards Clinton regarding maybe response time and interruptions.
Well, that's the charge that's coming out of the Trump campaign. The other moderator is Martha Raddatz, along with Anderson Cooper. Any thoughts on that, Ken Goldstein?
I think debating any presidential debate is a very difficult job. This year, it's particularly difficult, and last night was, I'm not sure what the right adjective is, phenomenally difficult.
I thought actually they were both pretty aggressive and kept moving the thing forward to different issues that they wanted to cover. They should have probably, since they were in St. Louis, talked about problems with police and African-American men. They didn't get there, but they did get to a lot.
And so what I was going to say is, You know, that said, I think they did do a fine job, and it's always that balance of them wanting to press the candidates on a question and then letting the questioners in the room ask their questions. I think also part of the Clinton strategy was actually to try and, the moderator may have pressed Trump more, but I think that was natural given some of his responses. But I think the Clinton strategy was also to talk less and to have Trump try and talk more. They think that's a good thing. That's a good thing for them. Listen, we've talked a lot about also her relative performance. I think she did a fine, polished job in a very challenging environment. But in an alternative world where we hadn't – where Don, of course, it would be a completely different world, so it's a little bit silly to say. But the things that have happened to Clinton over the last couple of days would normally be devastating to a candidate. And Clinton herself has very low favorability. We were chatting before, and you have some University of Wisconsin roots, and I spent most of my career at University of Wisconsin. As I look at this presidential election, I'm sort of reminded of a Barry Alvarez quote, who was the football coach at Wisconsin. Wisconsin went to the Rose Bowl a number of years ago, and some outside sports pundit said that Wisconsin was the worst team to ever go to a Rose Bowl, and Wisconsin won. And so Alvarez walked into the press conference afterwards and said, well, I guess we're the second worst team to ever go to a Rose Bowl. And it's all relative, but we are going to have, whoever wins this election, the second most unpopular major party nominee and to win the presidency. And Hillary Clinton got through that last night. But some of the leaked emails, I think in a normal year, her claiming of Abraham Lincoln would have been the focus of significant scorn. But I don't think it's going to get much attention here with everything that's going on.
One of the big questions that's looming for me is whether we can do a reset and go back to some kind of civility in political discourse after what we've seen in this debate. And that's a question to contemplate. We saw some pretty serious contentiousness right here in California in the debate between Loretta Sanchez and Kamala Harris. Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper were mentioned, and there was a very important point in last night's debate. Moderator Martha Raddatz actually brought up how Donald Trump's running mate Mike Pence said that provocations by Russia need to be met by American strength, and the U.S. should be prepared to use military force. Here is Donald Trump's response.
He and I haven't spoken, and I disagree. I disagree.
You disagree with your running mate.
I think we have to knock out ISIS. Right now, Syria is fighting ISIS. We have people that want to fight both at the same time. But Syria is no longer Syria. Syria is Russia, and it's Iran, who she made strong, and Kerry and Obama.
A lot of people probably really paused at that one. I would submit Melinda Jackson. He said, I haven't talked to my vice presidential running mate, and I disagree with him. All in one breath?
Yes. Yes, well, I'm going to have to go with Ken here. I have never seen anything like it before. This is just unprecedented. He seemed to almost be surprised at the comments, like he hadn't watched the debate or wasn't aware of it. So we don't really see a united ticket on the Republican side. They don't seem to be very good friends and don't seem to be campaigning together too much. I think it really is indicative of the split we're seeing in the Republican Party this year as well. And the fact that Donald Trump is really not your typical Republican. And the people supporting him also are a subset of Republican voters. I really think, thinking about the long-term impact of this and the civility of our discourse and these more long-term effects of this election season, I think the long-term future of the Republican Party is another really important part of the story this year. After the 2012 election, the Republican Party did some soul searching and really came out with a report saying, okay, we really need to broaden our appeal. We need to think about how to capture new voters and build a winning coalition going forward. This year has been the complete opposite of that. And this really unconventional self-focused candidate we see in Donald Trump is certainly not doing the Republican Party any favors going forward. I really wonder how this next generation is going to think about the parties in this country, and not just the Republicans. I think the Democrats have to worry a little bit too, because we saw in the Democratic primary race a lot of dissatisfaction on the Democratic side as well. So, you know, it's a combination of dissatisfaction with growing income inequality, whether people really have a fair chance and equality of opportunity in this country. And then watching this campaign with these two very unpopular candidates is really just reinforcing, I think, some of that cynicism and frustration that that the American people are feeling right now.
Well, we did ask our listeners on social media who they think won the debate. And let me just read a few responses. Jessica says, whichever one said actual coherent sentences is the winner, really. Low bar we've set for ourselves with this election, but Hillary did give some good answers. And Steve writes, Trump won. I'm disappointed that more time wasn't spent on the substance of economy, terrorism, jobs, health care. I don't care about his tape or taxes. And Dee Dee writes, I think, frankly, we all lost. What an ugly and dispiriting 90 minutes. Let me go to more of your calls. Let's go next to Albany. Judy, welcome.
Hi, thank you. You know, I'm concerned that all this focus on these personal peccadilloes of Donald Trump by the liberal media and the sort of holier-than-thou rhetoric that we're seeing is going to backfire, because we all have, you know, private thoughts and behaviors that we would not want to have magnified in the public arena. Whereas with Hillary, you know, she has apparently abused the public trust in a number of public offices that she's held. So, you know, if you look at the appeal of Donald Trump, I think a lot of his appeal has to do with the fact that we identify ourselves with him in, you know, that we all have these, we all have our dark side. We all have our bad behaviors. You know, maybe it's not as bad as genital grabbing, you know, language, boasting, but still, you know, it seems rather petty to me that, and there's so much focus and attention being given to it. And I wonder what your guests think about how that might work against Democrats in this election.
What do you think, Melinda Jackson?
Well, I think voters don't like it. It really isn't pretty. It isn't fun to watch. I think that last question of the debate last night, where the voter in the audience was saying, "Can you please find one nice thing to say about each other?" really reflects that sense of just disgust with all this mudslinging. That said, these are character issues, and the things that have come out over the weekend, I mean, this is really just beyond the pale. This goes back to a debate about how much should personal life matter. We certainly had a very thorough airing of that debate when Bill Clinton was president. How much should his personal indiscretions matter versus is he doing a good job as president? But you know, this is really something that I think does cross a lot of boundaries for many voters and raise questions about suitability for office.
And let me thank Judy for her call. I want to get to as many of your calls as I can. But I mentioned earlier that there were substantive issues. Let me go to Ken Goldstein on this. I mean, when they talked about the Supreme Court, for example, Hillary Clinton talked about Citizens United should be essentially done away with, dark money should be done away with. She talked about voting rights. In other words, she raised substantive issues with respect to Supreme Court appointment. And, of course, Trump said we need another Scalia, basically. And then when they talked about energy, and again, there were, you know, considerable and dramatic differences here. Trump said the EPA is killing energy policy. And he talked about the miners again. And Hillary Clinton has said some things certainly that have angered miners. She tried to essentially quell that, it seemed to me. But in other words, there were sharp differences. She mentioned fighting climate change. Everybody knows that he's opposed to fighting climate change. He thinks it's a fraud or a farce or whatever. There were things on the record. And how much do those things resonate in light of what we've been talking about, which is all of the stuff about give it some weight for us, Ken, can you? I mean, what are voters, if voters are disgusted with all the personal stuff and the taxes and the like, how much weight do they give to these real issues? Put real in quotation marks here.
So let me give you a glass half full and a glass half empty response. So the glass half full is, as ugly and unusual as this campaign has been, and listen, I mostly spent a career studying negative advertising, telling everyone to relax, that it's not so bad and it's not so – and then it's not much worse than it was.
You were mistaken?
Well, I'm not sure I was mistaken. You know, I think, you know, as ugly as this campaign has been, we do see the difference in policy and temperament between the two candidates. And we can talk about voters, but I think voters will be fully informed with all the information they need. They need to make a decision, and they're going to be starting making a decision with early voting already, and the decision they're going to be making on Election Day in less than a month. My glass half empty, again, given most of my scholarly work, would be a little bit different. This has been an unusual election, and it does matter that the two candidates are so immensely unpopular. And I think Melinda made a great point. And again, I say this as a compliment because we're both nerds and we're both geeks. But I think the interesting things for nerds and geeks like us to look at after the election is, what effect does this campaign have on the socialization of younger voters? And then what are going to be the internal battles within both parties? Everyone says what the internal battle is going to be in the Republican Party, but as Melinda correctly points out, there is a looming civil war that could also happen in the Democratic Party, whether that happens in 4 years or 8 years.
I keep thinking about post-election. Will we have gone through a catharsis, or is Trump, if he's the loser, say that things have been rigged, or if Trump takes over as president, what does that mean in terms of not only policy but really America's role in the world? I mean, you can guess a little bit better with Hillary Clinton, and that's part of the argument that Trump brings forward, because it would follow to a great degree the Obama administration. And there's – by the way, Melinda Jackson, you admit to being a nerd and a geek?
Proudly.
That's a compliment in our world.
I know.
Yeah.
But let me go to a question here from Ben and go to you on this, Melinda Jackson. Ben says, how will the Trump train wreck, as he describes it, affect the down ballot races and policies? At this point, we're on the verge of a lot of legislators and people running on the GOP tickets sort of feeling maybe they have to ditch Trump.
Yeah, well, this is really a concern for the Republican Party right now. There are a lot of worried people all around the country trying to figure out how to get voters to actually turn out on Election Day. So turnout could very well be depressed because of this lack of enthusiasm for Trump. We have seen over the weekend, again, dozens of Republicans denouncing Trump, disavowing him, de-endorsing him, even encouraging him to step out of the race at this point, which he doesn't seem inclined to do. But for voters who don't feel that they can, in good conscience, cast a vote for Trump, they very well may decide to stay home. The challenge is going to be to get them to go to the polls and skip the top of the ticket and vote for those other really important offices, for the House, for the Senate, for state assemblies across the country, for local offices. Usually, right, with a popular candidate, you rely on those coattails to bring the voters to the polls and help out everyone else down that ticket. I think it's very likely that we may see depressed Republican turnout this year, which, again, is going to be a significant problem not only for determining control of Congress, but also looking forward for the long term of the Republican Party.
Oh, we should mention that just today, House Speaker Paul Ryan told Republican lawmakers that he will no longer defend Donald Trump and will focus instead on defending the majority in Congress. Let me go to more of your calls, and let me go next to David. David, thank you for waiting. Join us.
Thanks. So I'd like to comment on the level of political discourse and what it means with respect to
the ability to govern after all this is over. And frankly, I would say that Trump's approach, his strategy has been, I am rubber, you are glue. So whenever there's a question raised, whether it's about fitness to govern, he simply says, no, that's you. And so there never is an effort, and this is not limited to Trump, but there's never an effort to answer the question. And frankly, I do hold the media to an extent accountable for this. Instead of having independent commentators, we have the blonde Bobsey twins on CNN. We have this sort of necessity of having people from each side not answer the question and talk about the deficiencies of the other side. So at the end of the day, what we have is an election that's settled, and short of a landslide, we're just going to have a clown show for the next 4 years of infighting. So I'd like some comments on just, you know, the level of discourse and what it means to be able to govern.
Well, David, I appreciate your comment. I think we have been implicitly, through other calls and emails, been talking about the level of discourse, and there's a great deal of concern, consternation, and dissatisfaction. And let me get another caller on. Helga, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Michael, you mentioned the San Francisco Chronicle headline this morning that this was a bad night for America, and I particularly liked the first question last night, what are we signaling to our youth? When Donald Trump answered that about ISIS, about the sex tape that he will chop the head off of ISIS, I do think it's the disrespect to the feminine, actually, it's disrespect to women that has brought this country and the world to the state that we're in. There's not a day when we don't have content that says viewer discretion advised and warning graphic images. I feel like we are being dumbed down and numbed down. And the more we talk about what is good or how it's acceptable, the more kind of it becomes part of the fabric of our society. And I'm missing the emotional component of saying, this is just not okay. I mean, I know we don't have a test to run for presidency, but isn't there a moral test that we need to instill, uphold as a culture?
I appreciate that comment as well. I don't know. Ken, you want to comment? Ken Goldstein?
That system is called the voters making judgments, and all of that information is out there. None of this is secret. And the previous caller was critical of the media, and I think it's fine to be critical of the media and in their early coverage of Donald Trump. But, you know, I was thinking on Friday that, well, probably the person having the worst day was Donald J. Trump, but the people having the next worst day were whoever was head of opposition research for Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, who were trying to contest against Trump in the Republican nomination. That's information that, if they were doing their job well, should have gotten out in the Republican primary. And whether or not that's something the media could have gotten or was the job of the media, we can discuss.
Well, there's the argument that nobody took Trump seriously enough for quite some time, and they didn't want to attack him because of that 11th Commandment or Ronald Reagan and all that.
I'm familiar with that argument, and my point stands. That was obviously a mistake, and I think it's also the case that it's pretty clear that that sort of information wasn't found, or it would have been used and should have been used in the Republican primary.
Let me thank the caller, and we'll go to Idaho next and welcome Catherine. Catherine, you're on. Welcome.
Hi. This is Catherine Butte in Idaho. And I was wondering if we might be able to come together as Americans and look at these two candidates as job applicants for a very important job. Forget the differences, put on blinders. We don't see a man, we don't see a woman, we don't see Republican or Democrat. We just see their body of work that they're bringing to the table, whether they're qualified or not qualified for a position.
You mean like The Apprentice Show?
or yes, as coming together for the good of our country, for the good of all of us working together.
I think that's worthy sentiment and noble of you, and I thank you for bringing it into the mix here. Let me bring another out-of-state caller in from New York. Maureen joins us. Maureen, welcome.
Hi, thank you. One of the things that has driven me insane about both the first debate and last night's debate was apart from his message, the way Donald Trump tries to present it. He makes generalizations. He uses the same phrases and the same vocabulary every single time. And I keep thinking that he's never learned about synonyms. He's never learned just the format of making a generalization and then supporting it with statements. High school debate teams know this. I'm not in favor of Trump to begin with, but at least Hillary makes a statement and backs it up with what she's going to do. Trump has never said how he's going to do something. He just makes these broad generalizations as if, when elected president, he could be king.
Well, Maureen, I thank you for that call. Of course, the argument of the Trump people would be she may be more fluent and more articulate, but she's also much more of a seasoned, 30 years, they kept mentioning, seasoned politician. Let me thank all of our callers and emailers and our guests, Beth Reinhart with us earlier from The Wall Street Journal, Ken Goldstein here in studio from USF, and Melinda Jackson from San Jose State. We do have another hour. We're going to move from politics to poetry, which may be a relief for many of you. Thank you for being a part of this hour. Appreciate your listenership and are grateful for it. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our general manager is Joanne Wallace. You can continue this discussion. In fact, we encourage you to do that online by going to kqed.org/forum. And poetry up ahead. Stay tuned for that. Thank you for this hour. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.